Hey, I'm Darren. I'm one of the pastors here at Focus 314. Anybody relate to that a little bit? Right? So today we're starting a brand new series called My Big Fat Mouth. We're going to be talking about the words that we say. And this is going to be, it's going to be a spiritual series, but I'm going to tell you what, it is going to be so practical for the way that we live. I got a question for you. Anybody in here ever got in trouble because of something they said? And you're like, oh man, me and my big fat mouth, right? Like you just say something and you wish, like as the words are even like coming out, you're like, oh, you know, like you just want to shove them right back into your mouth, right? Like we've got to be intentional about the words that we say. In fact, Proverbs 18 says that our words are so powerful. They have the power of life and death. Our words that we say are very very powerful. I don't know about you. When I was a kid, they say, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Yeah, right. In fact, words are often more painful than those actual other things that we have. They leave lasting wounds on the inside. Our words are very powerful. In fact, Jesus even said this in Luke chapter 6, and this is our theme verse for the entire series. He said, a good man, which is everybody, all-consuming. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart. And an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. My question for you today is, what are you full of? Some of y'all are full of something, right? Like, but we talk, the way that we talk, the words that are coming out are very, very important. It's about what's on the inside of us. And so this is going to be an incredibly practical series that we're going to go through. And we're going to start it today by talking about an incredibly important topic, and that is the area of complaining. We're going to talk about complaining today. It's pretty quiet in here right now, I'll tell you. Some of you are like, oh, great. You're complaining about talking about complaining, right? Like, that's how you feel. How about this? Does anybody, have you ever been in a situation? Parents, anybody who's a parent or you were a child and you remember being like this in a car going on a road trip, right? Like you go on a road trip. Anybody go on vacation, you're going to go on a road trip, you know, like the Great American Family road trip, and you have great expectations for it, right? You're thinking, this is going to be wonderful, a time for our family to get together and share enjoyment, all this kind of stuff. And then you're like 5 minutes out of the city and all of a sudden your kids are doing what? Are we there yet? I gotta go to the bathroom. This is taking forever. And it gets so bad that at some point, somebody from the front seat is gonna say something like this. I'm gonna turn this car around, right? Like, you've been there before. You might have said it. In fact, I remember the first time that I said it, and I was like, wow, I'm an old person now because I just said that to my kids, right? Like, I remember my parents saying it to me, and I was like, there you go. I've turned into my dad, right? Because complaining, all of a sudden, we have these great expectations, and then the reality hits. And all of a sudden, all of this complaining, it just kind of, man, it ruins everything, doesn't it? It just turns it into something that you don't want to be part of. Complaining is an issue that we've got to talk about. And in fact, when I think about complaining and I think about trips, my first thought goes back to the Old Testament. It goes back to God's chosen people, the nation of Israel. I got to tell you, these are people that they were pretty justified in what they had to complain about. Because at one point, these are God's chosen people, right? Like that's what that has been told to them since they were small. We're set apart, man. We got something special. But yet, they were in slavery. They were in bondage for 400 years. That's something to complain about, right? Like they're justified in having to do backbreaking work at all times. Hey, we're supposed to be special here, and yet we're slaves instead. And so then God does something pretty miraculous. He heard what they were saying. And so then in a miraculous way, he sent these 10 plagues down and changed Pharaoh's heart, and they were able to leave Israel or to leave Egypt as free people. And then they saw the Red Sea part away, and they were able to cross on dry land. And then Pharaoh's army comes through and the Red Sea closes in and destroys his entire army. And as they're walking through the wilderness, as they're in the middle of the desert, God sends like food from heaven and waters flowing from rocks, and their clothes don't run out for the 40 years that they're in the middle of the wilderness. And they see miracle after miracle after miracle. And yet, do you know what they did? They complained and complained and complained over and over and over again. In fact, this is what they said in Exodus 14. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die?" Right? Like they're whining and complaining. Like, what have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we told you this was gonna happen. Just leave us alone, okay? Just leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians. Wouldn't it have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert? Whining and complaining and grumbling over and over and over again after seeing miracle after miracle after miracle. Are we there yet? Are we to the promised land yet? This is taking forever. Complaining. And then Moses says something to them in this powerful verse that I think that if we heard it for ourselves, it might stop us in our tracks. Later on, he says this in chapter 16, which I think it's so ironic that it's chapter 16, 40 or two chapters later, like all of this happening, grumbling and complaining over and over. And he says this, "You're not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." What are we grumbling and complaining about? And if we had the idea that instead of us complaining about a situation, maybe it's something that could even be justified about, maybe it's something small, but there's something that we're complaining about in this world, in our life that we have, that we're not complaining against the situation, we're actually complaining against God. Because the last time I checked, he gave us life. And what we're doing is we're complaining about his gift. That's pretty powerful. My question for you today, instead of talking about it just in this general idea, I want to have it hit home for you a little bit, for every single person. And so I want you to actually think about this question. What is it that you complain about the most? Actually think about that. What is it that you complain about the most? What is it in life that isn't fair? It's not fair that you have to go through it and you complain about it all the time. As you're sitting there thinking about it, I want to share a story with you real quick. And this was not fair at all. So a couple of months ago, we were able to talk our youngest son into not having a birthday party. Come on, somebody, right? Like that was a miracle in itself right now. I don't remember when all of a sudden, like, every kid gets a birthday party. I didn't grow up with birthday parties all the time. Like, this turned into a thing, right? Like, it's just a party. We have to, like, they have a right. Like, man, maybe it's because we're parents. I did it, right? Like, it's on me. My oldest son, 1 year, he had three birthday parties because he had grandparents coming into town, so we had to have a family birthday party. Then he wanted to go to Topgolf, so we said, well, you only get a couple of friends to be able to go to Topgolf with you because I'm not paying for everybody to go to Topgolf, right? So then he got that one, and then he's like, but I have all these other friends. Okay, then we'll have another. Boy, I had three birthday parties. This is ridiculous, right? Like, that's all my fault, right? Like, I'm complaining about these birthday parties. But instead, we talked our youngest son into having, instead of having a birthday party, we said, hey, how about if we take you to a Phoenix Suns game? And he was all about it. he was like, hey, that sounds fantastic. So it was just a couple months ago. We went to a Phoenix Suns game, and we got there a little bit early. And as we were sitting down in our seats, a lady came up, and she began to talk to me. And she said, hey, how would you like to be part of some entertainment during one of the timeouts? And my response was, oh, you want me to be to act a fool, right? Like that, everybody wants to laugh at me, right? And she's like, well, you can actually win some money if you do this. So I was like, oh, okay, well, how much? Actually, I think it was my wife that was like, how much are we talking about right there, you know? And so she was like, well, you have a chance to, you could shoot a basket, like you could shoot a free throw, a three-pointer, or a half-court shot. And if you want to do the free throw, you can do $700 you can win. If you want to do the free throw or the three-pointer, then you can get $7,000. A half-court shot is $77,000, right? And so Jenny immediately was like, he's going to do it, okay? Because we got a little something going on. We're actually getting our backyard worked on in a couple of phases, and one of those phases is getting a pergola. And so Jenny wants a pergola. And she said, when you shoot the three-pointer, say, for the pergola! All right? So that's it's a chant in our house right now, you know? And so she's excited about this, and I was like, okay, cool. I'll go down there, and I'll shoot this three-pointer, because I'm not going to hit a half-court shot. Chances of that aren't too high, but I got about 30% chance of hitting a three-pointer, so okay, we'll do this. So we go down to the court, and I got to bring my oldest son down there with me and be kind of part of it. Thought that'd be a cool experience for him, and they tell me, this is what they tell me as soon as I get there. They're like, okay, when you get on the court, the Phoenix Suns gorilla, he's going to give you the ball. All right, cool. And then they said, now, you don't get any kind of practice shot. You can't even just like flip it up in the air or anything like that. Once you get the ball, then you just got one shot and that's it. Okay, all right. You know, like I still, whatever. You know, like this is how we'll do it. So we get on the court and it's kind of fun, you know. We're down there during the game and everything like that. And I'm sitting there and they're asking me what shot I'm going to take, the three-pointer, and then the gorilla hands me the ball. So he hands me the ball, and it's not a regular ball. It's a ball that has duct tape all over it. There's duct tape all over this ball, and it's really slippery. And so I spin it in my hand kind of one time and almost drop it. And then I take one bounce, and it's kind of dead because it's covered in duct tape, right? Like, so I'm like, okay, what's going on with this? But hey, I'm gonna do my best for the pergola, right? So I line up my shot. In fact, my son's taking some pictures, and so you can see me right down here in my son's gear and wearing my Jordans. You know, that's how I roll. And I'm lining up, right? I'm feeling pretty good, and so you can tell, you know, I'm getting into the stance and go to the next shot. Hey, that's some form right there, right? Like, okay, your pastor's played a little basketball every once in a while, so I got good form. You can see I'm lining it up, and then the shot goes, and go to the very next one. Hey, look, that ball's on target. Let me tell you something. That ball's on target. When I let that thing fly, I thought, I'm going to get my wife a pergola right now. That's what I thought. I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, this has got a chance. This has got a chance. But then there's an air ball. Y'all see that ball right there? It's all blurry. And I don't know if you can see it. Maybe you might want to even go up and look at it a little bit later. My face is like this. What just happened? Like, what? That was an air ball, right? Like, that's not supposed to happen like that. And then actually see my reaction. What was that? What was that? Because here's what this guy said to me, the guy that's doing the announcing and everything like that. This is what he said to me after the air ball went. He goes, got to use your legs, bro. Okay, now I'm a little upset, right? Like, this is what I'm saying at this moment. That's not a real ball. That's not a real ball. I'm walking up the steps and I'm getting it a little bit from the crowd, you know, and I'm like, that's not a real ball. That's like a medicine ball that was happening. In fact, we got up to my seats afterwards and I'm kind of getting it from the guys that are sitting around me, and I'm like, let me tell you guys, that's not a real ball. And then the guy that was right behind me, he's like, we need to do something about this. That's a ripoff that they're doing that. My question is, what in this life is not fair? What in this life happens in situations that you complain about the most? maybe there's some things that are pretty difficult. They're not as silly as a little basketball game and a ball that's not a real ball. But maybe there's some things that you complain about a lot. Maybe you work for somebody who's just brutal. It's tough. What do you complain about the most? Maybe you have a situation that maybe you're married and man, this person here, you know, and maybe you might even be justified in complaining about it. But what is it that you complain about the most? What is it in this life that isn't fair? Maybe it's even small things that come creeping in all the time. Complain about the weather. Oh, it's so hot. Oh, I feel it. It's already getting hot. It's not even hot yet, but it's going to get there. And so I'm just mad and angry about it even right now. Maybe it's the weather. Maybe it's traffic that you got to deal with every single day. Maybe it's these small little things that get to us. Maybe there's nothing to watch on TV, right? Like, come on, Netflix. I just binge watched my 15th show and now there's nothing left. What is it that you complain about the most? Because we all have those things. Where are you at in it? Let me tell you something. The problem isn't the situation. The problem is not that Netflix doesn't have another show on it anymore. The problem is this, is that you've taken your focus off of God and you've put the focus directly on you. Well, this isn't fair to me. Why do we complain? It's because our focus is directly on us instead of the goodness of God. If we want to stop the curse of constant complaining, we need to refocus. We need to really look at where our focus is at in this life and put the focus back on the goodness of God. We're going to talk about an individual who is very justified and had every right to complain about the situation that he was in. And that individual is the Apostle Paul. We talk about Paul quite a bit around here. He's an amazing individual. And he had one dream as a preacher. He had this dream to go to Rome and to go there as a preacher, sharing the gospel, the good news of Jesus, because he understood how significant Rome was. We've even heard this, right? Like, all roads lead to Rome. How significant this city was. And he had this dream. He said, you know, if I can go to Rome as a preacher and I can get in front of some of those leaders, man, I'm going to be able to change the world. This is going to be a significant impact if we can go there as a preacher. But Paul didn't have his dream fulfilled. Paul had so many situations that happened to him over and over and over again. Man, he was shipwrecked. He was bitten by snakes. He was stoned. He was left for dead. He was abandoned. He had people that he loved that turned on him. All of these things over and over and over again. And even the one dream that he had of going to Rome as a preacher, instead he went to Rome, but he went as a prisoner. He was there for 2 years under house arrest, awaiting his trial and possible execution. And so instead of going to his dream place as a preacher, instead he went in chains as a prisoner. He had every right and would have been justified to be able to sit here and say, come on, God, can I catch a break? Is there one thing that can happen that could just, like, can just one thing go right for me at least one time? You know the dream that I had, and yet it's gone. He had every right to be justified in complaining about it. But instead, he says this in Philippians. He's writing a letter to Philippians as he's chained up in prison, and he said this: do everything you do, do it without grumbling or arguing. Other translations say, without complaining. Do just some of the stuff. No, do everything that you do. Everything that you do, do it without grumbling or complaining, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God, without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Everything that we do, we should not complain about. We got to stop it. Why?
Because many times what we're doing is not complaining about the situation, but we're complaining about the gift that God has given us, which is life. Everything that we do it without complaining. I'm going to give you one very practical reason. One very practical reason why we should stop complaining. One very, very practical reason, and then we're going to go into a couple of shifts in our mindset that will help us to stop complaining. If we just have a shift in our mindset in some of these things, it will help us to stop complaining. The very practical reason that we should stop complaining is a thing called this. It's called the confirmation bias. Confirmation bias. What is confirmation bias? It means this, is that you get what you expect. That's what confirmation bias is. There's an individual, Travis Bradbury, he wrote this book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0. Emotional intelligence is absolutely fascinating when you look about it. And he what he talked about in this book and the studies that they've gone through is negativity and complaining. And he surmised that confirmation bias happens. That what happens for us is that when we hardwire our brain to think negative thoughts, we think more negative thoughts. When we complain, we hardwire our brain to complain even more. It's this vicious cycle that happens. Confirmation bias is this. Let's just take this for example. Say that you believe that all men are losers. All men are losers, right? And some of you are like, yes, right? Like, finally some truth being spoken in this church, right? So you believe that all men are losers, then you meet a guy, and what is he? He's a loser. You believe that all men are losers, that's what you're going to find. That's what you're going to find. Yeah, you know, I think that going to church is full of people who just, they're just so boring and horrible, and I could never go to a church and meets in a school. That would just be horrible. And then the first time you come in here, what is it? It's horrible. It is. Because what we're looking for is what we're going to find. What you expect, well, see, I told you. I knew that that's how it was going to play out. That's confirmation bias. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to have my brain preset to find the negativity and the bad things in an already bad world. I want to be able to have the presupposition and the mindset that I want to find the good in a bad world, because that's what I want to be able to fill my life full of. See, what our heart is full of is what we're going to speak. Are we going to be full of good things, or are we going to be full of bad things? Well, we got to have a change in our mindset. Because if we're going to be thinking and saying negative things all the time, if we're going to be complaining about stuff, guess what? It's going to be bad. That's confirmation bias. Why should you stop complaining? Because you're just going to see it so much worse. Life is going to be so much worse for you. Every situation that you go into is going to be bad for you. This is exactly what those children of Israel were doing. Exactly what they were doing. When they were complaining all the time, and so then they're in the middle of bondage, complaining, complaining, complaining. Everything is negative. They get set free. What happens? Complaining, complaining, complaining. Why? Because their brain was already preset to complain about everything. They're going to see the negativity in all things. That's exactly what can happen to you. My job is horrible. I do not like my job. You get a new job, and what is it? It's horrible too. It could be the exact thing that you were asking for when you were in your old job, but this new job, it's just as bad. It's just as worse. And you've seen this happen to somebody, that they go from job to job to job to job, and it's not any fault of theirs, right? It's always somebody else. Why? Because of where their brain is already preset. Confirmation bias. Why should you stop complaining? Because you're going to see the world in a completely different way. In fact, it might even be a little bit better than what you think. That's a very practical reason. Now, here, how do we do that then? How do we get rid of that confirmation bias? How do we help ourselves to stop complaining so much? Well, we're going to look at Paul and how he would have actually maybe said it today. This is kind of what I imagine. Number one, how do we stop complaining? What's the shift in our mindset? Number one is this. If you can change your circumstances, then do something about it. If it's a circumstance that can change, then you need to actually do something about it. Like, it's okay. It is completely okay to be dissatisfied with a situation. What are some of those things in this world that we should be dissatisfied with? Like, an easy one. Right? Should there be hungry children in the world? No, there should not be hungry children in the world. And instead of just complaining about it, this is a situation and this is a circumstance that we can do something about. We don't have to just sit there and complain about it. We can actually do something. In fact, you can join us in doing something about it. We go to Feed My Starving Children once a month and we package food to send off to kids that don't have any food. Instead of just complaining about it and like, oh, I'm going to put a post on social media and let everybody know how bad this is, right? No, just do something about it. If there is a circumstance that you see that you're dissatisfied with and you can change something about it, then do it. Don't just sit there and complain about it. Actually do something about it. If you can pray about it, then you need to pray about it. If there's wisdom that you can gain to help a situation, then gain that wisdom. If you need to be able to get your rear end in gear, then get your rear end in gear. Work hard about changing a situation. But if you can change it, then do something. Absolutely, you should do something about it. But, and then this is the shift in our mindset. If we can't change our circumstance, then we need to change our perspective. If we can't change our circumstance, then we need to change our perspective. The situation and the circumstance that Paul was in, he wanted to go to Rome as a preacher. He wanted to be able to stand up to some leaders and let them know the goodness of God. And instead, he was there as a prisoner under house arrest, chained to a Roman guard 24 hours a day, taking 8 shifts as he would go about their day. This is not a situation that Paul wanted to be in. In fact, he even said this in Philippians 2. He said, but even if. Everybody say even if. I love that. I love that phrase, even if. But even if I am being poured out like a drink offering, we'll talk about that. But even if in my situation, even if things are going the way that I want them to, I'm going to serve God. But even if things are not going the way that I want them to, I'm going to serve God. But even if, no matter what, he said, in everything that we do, do it without complaining. But even if I am being poured out, everybody say poured out. Even if I'm being poured out like a drink offering, what in the world is a drink offering, right? Like, what does that mean? Okay, so back in the day, we know when we're looking at the Old Testament and when Jesus was there, that they would bring offerings and sacrifices to God, right? Like they would bring an animal or a grain offering, something like that, and they would put it on an altar, and then they'd light it on fire, and then it's supposed to act as an offering to God. And then what the drink offering was when there was a situation going on in their life that was really, really tough, they would bring an additional offering on top of that sacrifice. And here's what the drink offering was. It was usually wine or some other strong drink. And so when you have an offering that's on an altar, that's on fire as an offering to God, and you add alcohol to it? We got any pyromaniacs in the room, right? Like, what happens in that situation, right? Like, whew, right? Like, what do I say on my eyebrows? You know, like, that's what happens. What happens in that situation with the drink offering? It's all consuming. It is like an explosion that would happen. Even if I am being poured out, everybody say poured out. Even if I am being poured out like a drink offering, even if my life seems like it is completely combustible right now, even though this circumstance feels like it is all consuming in my life, that there is just this fire, it is, everything is just coming crashing down around me. Even if my life is being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice of service coming from your faith, I'm going to be glad and rejoice. Even if everything is on fire around me. It doesn't seem like there's a way out. Even if I will be glad and rejoice. I'm going to do it with all of you. So too should you. So I'm writing a letter to you and you see the situation that I'm in. Don't complain about it. Be glad and rejoice with me. See, all of a sudden, Paul had a shift in his perspective. He had a shift in his mindset. He was in a situation and a circumstance that he couldn't do anything about. He couldn't change it. He was waiting trial. He's chained up to a guard 24 hours a day. Even if I am being poured out like a drink offering, that is true worship. In fact, Paul even said it another place in Romans. Again, where is he at? He's in Rome and he's writing this letter to the Romans. He says it this way in 12:1. He said, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, in view of God's goodness, in view of the fact that we might not be in the situation that we're in, but God has come through for us every single time, as you are going to view it that way, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. This is true and proper worship." Worship is not just the moment on a Sunday when we're sitting here with our hands raised and we're singing a song. So worship is a daily living of a sacrifice to God, where every single day I'm going to say, even if life is not easy, I'm going to serve you. That is what worship is all about. See, Paul had the opportunity to change his perspective, and he was going to do it. Why was Paul able to do this? I'm going to tell you why. Because Paul was not the center of his own story. Paul understood that his life, that it didn't revolve just around him. He instead said, "The focus is not on me, the focus is on Jesus. My life is being poured out as a drink offering to Jesus. I'm not the center of my own life." And because of that, because he decided that who was going to be the center of his story, because of that, he had a change in perspective. If you can't do anything about your circumstance, you need to change your perspective. He said this earlier in Philippians. He said, "Now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, I want you to know that what has happened to me," what has happened? He didn't go to Rome as a preacher. He went to Rome as a prisoner. "I want you to know that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel." See, we all had this dream. We all talked about going to Rome and being there to impact the world, right? And now we're sitting there like, why? Why is this happening? Why are you sitting there in chains? What has happened to me is actually being used to advance the gospel. And then he says this: "As a result of him being there, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ." Because he had a change in perspective. He said, "I'm supposed to be here as a prisoner. You want to know who's really in prison? Every 8 hours, I got fresh meat coming. Every 8 hours, I got a new Roman guard that's getting chained to me. Every 8 hours, I got an 8-hour sermon coming around. Every 8 hours, I've got somebody who hasn't heard the good news of Jesus. See, I thought that I was going to come in here and I was going to preach to thousands. Instead, I'm preaching to one individual every single day." See, what has happened to me is actually being served to further the kingdom of God. The gospel is being spread throughout the entire palace guard. See, he had a change in perspective. It would have been so easy for him to say, "I'm sitting here chained to this dude, and man, let me tell you something, these guys got some BO, like I just want to gag all day long." But instead, he said, "You know what? What I am chained to is now my ministry. What I am chained to, what I am a prisoner to, now I have a change in my perspective, and I am here to minister to this individual." My question for you today is this: what are you chained to? What is it that you're complaining about all the time? What is it that you feel like you are a prisoner to that is sitting there that you're complaining about over and over and over and over again? What is it that you're chained to? That you're having a hard time putting the right perspective into things? Because maybe God has you in that situation not for you to complain about it, but for you to minister through it. Maybe somebody in that situation needs to hear the love of Jesus Christ. What are you chained to? What is it that you're complaining about the most? It might be the thing that God needs you to use the most. We need to have a change in our perspective, change our mindset, and understand that if there's nothing I can do about my situation and my circumstance, maybe it's because God has me to do something here. It would have been very, very easy for Paul to complain. He would have been justified in doing so. But he wasn't looking to try to be justified in his words. Instead, he was looking to be justified to Jesus Christ by sharing the gospel. What is it that you're chained to? What do you need to change in your perspective? I'm going to go back to a little son's trip that my family went on. See, it'd be really easy for me to be able to sit there and say, man, what a ripoff. Talking Stick Resort, of course the casino's not going to let me get any money, right? Like, that's not what they're in business for, right? Like, and I could sit there and complain about it over and over, and it could have ruined our entire night. How dare they give me a medicine ball for a shot, right? How dare they? But instead, I can look at the entire narrative. I can look at the entire situation and change my perspective. See, instead of me just sitting there like this, right? Like, that's not what I want to think about it. Instead, I want to think about the night like this. Because here's what the entire narrative looks like. See, we went on this little trip. We were able to take our son to this basketball game. And in fact, we went to that game because one of my friends actually hooked us up with the tickets. We have free tickets to be able to go to this game. And he didn't just hook us up with some tickets. He hooked us up with some pretty sweet tickets. Like, we were in this section that was like isolated. It wasn't a sweet box, but it was kind of like that. Our row, the entire row, was only 5 seats long. So it was the four of us sitting in our own personal row. We call it the nibbling row, right? Like, that's what the Suns call it now, from now on as well. Like, we had our own personal row, which was great because our boys got to run around and do their thing, and I didn't have to be like, settle down, you know, like, do whatever you want, I don't care, you know, like, we got to have a great time with it, you know, and I get to be able to say, hey, you know what, my buddy who hooked us up with the tickets, in fact, let me know that night was Steve Nash bobblehead night, so get there early, and hopefully your boys are going to be able to get a bobblehead, which they did. They both have a Steve Nash bobblehead, which they're like, this is the coolest thing in the world. Like, my youngest son has two things on his desk. He's got this little desk, and there's only two items on his desk. And one of them is the trophy that he won for his flag football championship just this past year. The other one, Steve Nash bobblehead. It's like a prized possession for him right now. Why did it happen? Because we got to go to this game. In fact, not only did we get to do that, we got to go down. Then this is me and my oldest son sitting in the tunnel waiting to be able to go out on the court. Like, how cool is that already? You know, I'm sitting there on the court. And that night was actually the decades night, and they were celebrating the 2000s. So they had some of you Suns fans or basketball fans, you know, the names of Amari Stoudemire, Steph Marbury, Sean Marion. They all came out on the court. And afterwards, they came and they walked right by us in that tunnel. And I was like, look, boys are big, right? Like, and I got to high five Sean Marion. How cool is that, right? Like, anybody else in here? No, see, I'm better, right? Like, but it was a great night. We got to be able to think about that situation. And then after the shot, after we went back up into our seats, the next time out comes, the grill and all the dancers and all that stuff, they get back on the court and they start throwing out the t-shirts. And we're sitting up a little ways, and the gorilla gun comes and poof, I don't even move. Bomb. caught the t-shirt right there, right? Like, we got a free t-shirt. Like, oh, you know, like, and now I'm my kid's hero again after the air ball. You know, like, yeah, it was awesome. And then the second half comes around. They shoot t-shirts out again. What happens? Boom, a second free t-shirt that we got that night. When we look at the entire narrative of this situation, it'd be so easy to get locked down into the one negative thing. It'd be so easy to complain about that. Instead, we get to look about all of the goodness of that night. It is so important to remember all of the goodness of the things that go on around us as well. It's so easy for us to get wrapped up into one circumstance and we want to complain and complain and complain about it. But the reality is this, is that God is working in each and every single one of our lives. There has been miracle after miracle. Even as I'm scanning through this crowd, I know that there are miracles in each and every single one of your lives. And instead of us looking at the entire narrative, we get focused upon this one circumstance. It's time for us to look and change our perspective and look at the entire narrative of our life. That's what we need to do. We got to change our perspective. We need to be like Paul, where Paul understood that he was not the center of his own life. And here's our big takeaway today. You want to be able to stop the curse of constant complaining in your life? Understand that Jesus is the center of your story. Why do we complain? Because we get so focused upon ourselves. Well, this isn't fair. Well, life isn't fair. But when we understand that Jesus is the center in everything that we do, all of a sudden, we can see his goodness. All of a sudden, we see him working in these situations. We don't have to complain about it. We can see God working over and over and over again. I want to help you with this, to be able to really take this away and have your focus be on Jesus at all times. This is an incredible, powerful verse, Psalms 103. Psalm 103, verses 2 through 5. And I want to encourage you today that if this is a situation that you have, maybe you don't even want to admit it, but as soon as complaining started, we talking about it, there was something inside of your heart that was like, yeesh. This is an incredibly powerful psalm that can turn into a prayer for you. And it says this, "Let all that I am praise the Lord. May I never forget," that's powerful, "may I never forget the good things he does for me." It's so easy for us to forget those good things. It's so easy for us to just get wrapped up into the one small negative circumstance. I need to remember all the good things he does for me. What does he do for me? He forgives me of all my sins. He has saved me and redeemed me. He heals me of all my disease. He redeems me from death and crowns me with love and tender mercies. He fills my life with good things. Maybe you're sitting in a situation where you're complaining and you're finding yourself complaining too much. In fact, you don't even like being around yourself because you're complaining too much. This is a prayer right here. God, I pray that you will help me. And Father, I pray that you will help all of us remember the good things that you have done. We understand and we know that life isn't fair at times. In fact, it's hard even at times for us to remember those good things. But God, please put it at the front of our minds to not have the negativity on the front, but to have you on the front of our minds, and that we can be reminded of how good that you truly are. Church, I want to encourage you today that if you're sitting in this place and you found yourself complaining, or maybe if it's a cycle for you, you do well for a little while, but then all of a sudden you just catch yourself falling back into those old negative things. Today is a day for you to be able to start again, or maybe start for the first time. God, help me be intentional with my thoughts. Help me be intentional with the words that I say. Church, can you please stand with me today? Here's what I know. I know this without a shadow of a doubt, that all of us fall into it. It might be big things, and it might be small things. But let me encourage you with this. The small things lead up to the big things. If you continue to complain about the small things, you're definitely going to complain about the big things. If you can begin to stop complaining about the small things, that's going to create a pattern for you to stop complaining about the big things as well. It might be silly to talk about a basketball game, but that change in perspective changes your perspective on everything that you face. I'm going to ask you to go ahead and just to stay in an attitude of prayer. In fact, I want to, maybe some of you might even be embarrassed by this, so I'm just going to ask you, go ahead and close your eyes. Because I know that each of us fall into that trap of complaining about things at times. And some of you might even be in that trap right now where it's a big one for you. You know that negativity has set in, and it's time for you to be reminded of the goodness of God. And you want to be let go of that. You want to be able to find some freedom in that today. I want to encourage you. I want to pray for you. So just go ahead and raise your hand up. Just acknowledge. You're saying, you know what, I need help in this. If that's you, just raise your hand up. I'm going to pray for all of us, but that's just an acknowledgement for you before God to say, man, I need help. God, I need your help in this. There's hands up all over the place. I want to ask you to do this as well. Once you put your hand up, you can put it back down. But for some of you in here today that is saying, you know, I'm not reminded about the goodness of God because I don't even have a relationship with God. And it starts there. The first thing that he does is to forgive you of your sins. And how do you do that? You just say yes to him being your Lord and Savior. And how do we do that? By simply acknowledging him and believing in our heart. And so I want to ask that if there's someone in here today that wants to start with the goodness of God by being saved from their sins, you want to be able to have a relationship with Jesus, just acknowledge him today by raising your hand up real quickly, not trying to embarrass you or anything like that. Today's the day for you to be able to start that. Once you put your hand up, you can put it back down. Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for that. Today's the day to begin to understand the goodness of God. Church, let's go ahead and pray together. As I pray out loud, pray in your heart. Today's a day for freedom. Today's a day to begin to free from all that negativity. God, we give you everything that we have. All of the good and all of the bad. And even if this world is just going to be bad, even if I'm being poured out like a drink offering, even if it seems like it's exploding around me, God, I give you my life. And I want to be able to see the good. I want to be remembering. I want to be reminded of the good things, of how good that you truly are, so that today I can be glad and rejoice. Church, let's go ahead and be glad and rejoice together.